Ephesians chapter 11, and our text this morning will be the first six verses. We'll read those in just a minute. I want you to imagine with me that you are expecting to hear back from a potential employer about an exciting job opportunity. You went to the interview, and from your best assessment, it seemed to go well, but the person interviewing you was a little bit hard to read, and so there's some unsurety about your actually getting that job. One day passes, then 2 days pass, then 3 days pass, and with every day, kind of the anxiety begins to grow a little bit. There's uncertainty. Am I going to get the job or am I not? And you begin to wonder, and pretty soon it comes to the point where you just wish they would tell you one way or the other. Even if I don't get the job, just tell me, because the uncertainty is driving me crazy. You ever felt that way? Uncertainty in life makes us feel very uncomfortable when we simply don't know things. Our knowledge of this, how uncertainty affects us, was confirmed in one experiment conducted. It was an experiment where participants were asked to come and participate in a survey. Let me get a screen up here. There we go. And these participants were hooked up to electrodes that delivered a rather harmless but slightly painful electrical shock to the skin. And one set of participants in this experiment were told that when a button is pushed, you're going to feel an electrical shock, and that's what will happen. And so they told them that, and then they watched for the signs of stress. How did they respond to this knowledge? It was sure that the shock was coming when the button was pushed. And so they did that experiment, they measured the signs of stress, and then the button was pushed. There was another group of participants that were told, we're going to hook you up to these electrodes, you'll feel an electrical shock, we're going to push the button, and there's a 50% chance that you'll be shocked. It may happen, it may not. And then they watched them, and they observed the signs of stress and how they responded to that. Which group do you think were more anxious? It was those that had the element of uncertainty, not knowing what was going to happen, and therefore fearing not being prepared for what might happen. Well, that thought is actually emphasized in our text this morning, this thought of uncertainty, simply not knowing what might happen. Let me show it to you in the text. Look at Ecclesiastes 11. Look at the last line of verse 2. We read, "You know not what disaster may happen on earth." Look at verse 5. "You do not know something." Look at the middle of verse 5. "So you do not know this." Look at verse 6. "In the morning sow your seed, at evening withhold not your hand. You do not know which will prosper." Four times in the matter of six verses, Solomon reminds us of uncertainty. You don't know what might happen. And so that has actually been a theme of this closing portion of Ecclesiastes that we've been looking at. It's heightened here. These are the final verses of this last section before we move into the end section. But let me show you how it's been heightened since chapter 7, really. But look at chapter 8. Look at chapter 8 and verse 17. Solomon has written, "Then I saw all the work of God, that man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. However much man may toil in seeking, he will not find it out. Even though a wise man claims to know, he cannot find it out." And I've pointed out in times past that this is a repeated theme of this last section. Live your life, but you don't know how it's going to turn out. Look down in chapter 9 in verse 1, the very next verse. He says, "All this I laid to heart, examining it all, how the righteous and the wise and their deeds are in the hand of God. Whether it is love or hate, Man does not know. Both are before him. What am I going to experience, love or hate? I don't know. Possibilities are both. Look at chapter 9 and verse 11. Again, I saw that under the sun the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor the bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to those with knowledge, but time and chance happens to them all. He says, you would think the fastest is going to win the race, but that's not necessarily the case. Why? Verse 12, for man does not know his time. You don't know how things will end or when they'll end. Look at chapter 10 and verse 14. We saw this just a few weeks ago. A fool multiplies words, though no man knows what is to be and who can tell him what will be after him. Only a fool says, the future isn't uncertain. I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen tomorrow. He says, that's a fool's way of speaking because you don't know. There's uncertainty. And so our own inability to know and to control our own future, the earthly future, oftentimes stirs up a paralyzing kind of anxiety within us. If I don't know my future and I can't control my future, it leaves me paralyzed. When uncertainty strikes, we want to play it safe. Let me just not do anything or take any risk because I don't know how this may turn out. And so if you go back to Ecclesiastes 11, the commands in this text are actually given to us to avert that kind of thinking. Don't be paralyzed by uncertainty. Rather, that uncertainty should mobilize you. Look at the commands that are given us. We'll read the text in a moment, but look at the commands. Look at verse 1, the very first word, cast. There's a command. Cast your bread on the waters. Verse 2, here's a command. Give your portion to 7 or even to 8. Don't just sit there. Do something. Look at verse 6. In the morning, sow your seed. Continuing in verse 6, at evening, withhold not your hand. There are those four commands that target our human tendency to be paralyzed about uncertainties. Instead, it says, don't let those uncertainties paralyze you. Move forward. These commercial and agricultural illustrations are really demonstrable of the kind of life the wise person lives, even in the midst of uncertainty. The uncertainty shouldn't paralyze us, but rather mobilize us. Here's the point I want you to get this morning. Although the future is uncertain, don't just play it safe. Don't be immobilized by an uncertain future. And so the title of the message is this, don't just play it safe. Let's read the text together. Look at verse 1. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a portion to 7 or even to 8, for you know not what disaster may happen on earth. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth. And if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know the way the Spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. In the morning, sow your seed. At evening, withhold not your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good. Solomon is encouraging us in these words, in the midst of uncertainty, don't just play it safe. Let's pray and ask God to help us see these things clearly. Lord, thank you for your word, practical nature of it. Pray that we would be a people who are not immobilized by uncertainty because we desire control of our future. that we would be focused on our contribution. We would be focused on our faithfulness to what you've given us today. And we would be confident in your providential leading in the future. So help us, Lord, to apply these things, particularly to our lives. In Jesus' name, amen. Don't just play it safe. I want to begin by noting that there are other places in Scripture where we are warned against a kind of reckless abandon. That a fool sees, that doesn't see the danger. And the Bible says that actually a wise man sees danger ahead and hides himself. He's not just given to reckless abandon in life. There's a wisdom about it. But this passage that we're dealing with today actually gives us the other side of the coin. And it says sometimes we're too cautious in life. Sometimes there are factors in our life that make us too conservative, too self-protective. And if we think about all the uncertainties of life that Solomon has been talking about and explaining, sometimes it does tend to paralyze us. And so his focus is because we don't know what's going to happen, but we do know that God's in control of that, we ought to use every opportunity given us to work boldly and to not retreat. Why is this the case? I think there are three things here for us this morning. I want us to note the first of these in verses 1 and 2. Although life is uncertain, don't just play it safe and miss an opportunity, miss a God-given opportunity. Look at what he says in verse 1. Cast your bread upon the waters. Here's this command. And verse 2, give a portion. What does it mean to cast your bread on the waters? You might be thinking of that literally. I remember as a child thinking of this literally and thinking, taking my loaf of Wonder bread and throwing it in the water and how soggy and yucky that would be. And when it says it will come back to you, thinking, that's impossible. That thing's going to be in a million pieces. Well, it's not a literal understanding of this. It's metaphorical. We're to understand what he means by this expression. And there are a couple of different ideas. Let me just explain the text for you. The word cast there is an imperative. It's a command. But it's used in Nehemiah chapter 8, not just to cast away or throw away, but to actually send something to someone. In other words, deliver it or give it away in that sense. Bread here, when it talks of bread, many expositors think he's not speaking of the literal bread, but it's what we call metonymy. It's the meaning grain and wheat, which makes the bread. And so take your grain and your wheat, those things that are essential for making bread, and cast them on the water, as it were. And then he says, take your bread or these grains or wheat or whatever and cast them on waters. That's the big question. What does it mean to put them on waters? There are two main interpretations of this. The first of these, some of you hold in your laps perhaps a New American Standard Bible, and that Bible reads and gives an interpretation of the verse that really what he's talking about is being generous. Take what you have, this resource of grain or wheat or bread or whatever it is that's valuable to you, and give it away to other people. Put it on the waters. Give it away. And if you do that and you're kind to people in that way, eventually that kindness will come back to you. That's one possible interpretation of the verse. I don't think that's the best. I think really what he's speaking of is in terms of agricultural investment, because an agricultural kind of theme runs through this particular context. And what he's saying actually is this. Take your grain and invest it. Put it on the waters. What would that mean? Here's what an investment looked like in that day. You would take what you've harvested in an agrarian society and you would put it on a ship that would sail away to a different port. And there, that grain would be traded for something else that eventually would come back to you. This was a common biblical understanding. In fact, we read in Proverbs 31 and verse 14 of the virtuous woman that she is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. And it's this idea of the merchant who sends things out and trades with them and then brings back riches. So I think the idea here that Solomon is saying is, though life is uncertain, don't be afraid to miss it. You might miss an opportunity if you're not willing to invest in this life. If you're not willing to take a risk and put your grain on the water, that is, send it out. For he says in the second line of verse 1, after many days you will find it. And that's the problem we commonly run into, right? If I'm to make an investment in something, not just commercially and financially, but with my time or my talents, am I wasting my time? Am I wasting my talents? Will there be a return on that? Will I see the benefit of that? Solomon says, it'll happen after many days. Now, here's where we understand that we're dealing with a proverb. Proverbs are general principles. They're not absolute promises. Because right now, you're probably thinking of a time, yeah, I've made investments, whether of time or talent or treasure, and it hasn't returned. That can't be true. But generally speaking, Solomon says, don't be paralyzed by uncertainty. Go ahead and make the investment in this life. The reason I think this is a commercial use of this term is for this verse as well. In 1 Kings chapter 10 and verse 22, it says, the king, referring to Solomon, had a fleet of ships of Tarshish at sea with the fleet of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the fleet of ships of Tarshish used to come bringing gold, silver, ivory, apes, and peacocks. All these wonderful things that you couldn't have necessarily in the land of Israel. And as they sent those ships out, they would come back with these garnished and relished resources. But notice it was 3 years. That's a long time to wait. But I think Solomon is using that same thing here. He's saying, don't let uncertainty paralyze you. If you don't get an immediate return, simply invest in this life. That's the wise thing to do. That's why I state it this way. Although life is uncertain, don't just play it safe and miss an opportunity. One man has written and says, the preacher calls his readers to take life as from the hand of God and enjoy it despite of its perplexities. Such a life contains within it the element of trust and adventure. Cast something. It demands total commitment, all your bread, and has a forward look to it. There will be a reward which requires patience. That is after many days. His point is this. Don't let the unknowns of life cause you to miss an opportunity in life. Don't be paralyzed by uncertainties. And then verse 2, he says this. Give a portion to 7 or even to 8. For you know not what disaster may happen on the earth. Previously, he has taught us that we shouldn't miss an opportunity in this life. Go ahead and invest. Cast your bread on the waters. Here it is. Work hard at many opportunities. Be diversified in those opportunities. He says in verse 2, give a portion to 7 or even to 8. If you're talking to your financial advisor, he would put it to you this way. Diversify your portfolio. Because some of them may do well and some of them may not. We would put it this way. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. You say, well, what's this deal about? And think about it with this ship idea of putting your bread on the water. Don't put all your grain in one ship. Put it in others. Because one of those ships might hit the tempest and be sunk. And so put it out in different ways. But what's this deal about? Give it to 7 or even to 8. That's just an idiom that means be fully invested. Don't go half-hearted. Give it to 7. 7's the number of completion. And even give it to 8. Go 110% in what you're doing to invest. Don't be frozen. It doesn't mean don't do anything, but rather that you should do a lot of things because not all of them will succeed. This is what the text means. The end of verse 2, because you don't know what disaster may happen on earth, so diversify this way. The point is this, although life is uncertain, don't just play it safe and miss an opportunity. Now, how do we apply this? How does this happen in our lives? Well, God has entrusted us with certain things on this earth. He's entrusted us with talents. God has given you something, a gift, something for you to do. He expects you to invest it for his glory and the good of others in this world. God has given you time. Every day, God gives you a gift of time. And in his timing, your time will be up. God gives you treasure. He entrusts you with some of his things and his resources in this world to support yourself and also to be generous with other people. And God says, take those things, don't hoard them, but take those things and invest them. Use them as I intended. But you say, but I'm afraid. I'm afraid if I use my talent in this way and I invest it, there won't be a return or something will go wrong. I'm afraid if I use the resources in this way that it might not turn out the way that I planned. There's uncertainty, so I don't want to risk that. I'm afraid with this time that I'm not using it the best way. Remember, Jesus told a story about this in the New Testament. It's in the Gospel of Matthew in the 25th chapter, and Jesus said there was a certain wise man, and he entrusted certain of his servants with various talents. To one he gave five, to one he gave two, to another he gave one. You remember that story? When the master came back, he had a little sit-down. He said, what have you done with the things that I've entrusted to you? And the man that had five said, Lord, I invested them. I took risk. I went out. I did my best. And he says, great, you have done a fantastic job. Now he has 10. He wasn't immobilized by the uncertainty. The one that had two had doubled it to four, and he commended him, and he said, you've done well. You invested wisely. You serve my purposes. And do you remember the guy that had one? What did he say? I know that you're a hard master. I know that you want to exact where you didn't sow. And so I was afraid, is what he says. And what did he do? He buried that talent in the earth, which was a common way back then of keeping something safe. It was like putting it in a lockbox. But the fact is, he hoarded it because of his fear. And the master said, you have been unwise. You've not done what I've asked you to do. You've hoarded your talent. You've hoarded your time. You've hoarded this treasure. I anticipated that you would invest it. And so he said, take the talent from the one and give it to him who has 10. This is exactly what Solomon is saying about our lives. Don't hoard your life. The uncertainties of life paralyze us sometimes. I don't know what to do. I don't know the next right thing to do. Well, do what pleases God and trust him with the outcome. Don't play it safe and miss an opportunity. If your goal in life is to look good by avoiding risk and failure, you may look good on paper, but your life will never account for anything eternal. So what opportunities has God placed before you? What ways has he brought people into your life or events into your life to give you opportunities to invest? Not sit back and play it safe and avoid failure, but invest. Cast your bread on the water. Give portion to several. Do it 110%. Don't play it safe and miss an opportunity. Secondly, we learn this in verses 3 and 4. That although life is uncertain, don't just play it safe by waiting for your perfect timing. Look at what he says in verse 3. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth, and if a tree falls to the south or to the north, and the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. And you read that and you say, well, that's profound, right? It looks like it's going to rain, it rains. If the tree's going to fall, it falls. Well, what's he trying to communicate here? Verse 3 really reminds us of two things we can anticipate but can't control. Two things we can almost see coming, but we can't stop them. The first is this in verse 3. If the clouds are full of rain, it's going to rain. They empty themselves on the earth. Just this past week, I was sitting in my office over in the Heritage Building, and I noticed that it was getting dark outside in the afternoon. And I looked out and I saw some rain clouds forming and thought, it's going to rain. And pretty soon, sure enough, it started to rain. And then it just struck me, I left my windows down in my truck. And guess what? I wanted to stop it raining. Guess what? I couldn't. I saw it coming. I anticipated it. I knew it was going to be a bad deal, but I couldn't stop it. So after a drenching jaunt in the rain, I got my windows rolled up and everything seemed to be okay. This is what Solomon's saying. You can see storm clouds coming, but you can't control them. It's the same thing with the tree. If a tree falls to the south or the north, in the place where the tree falls, it will lie. The wind blows in that storm, and a tree is uprooted, and you watch that tree, and you wish you could stop it. But you can't. That tree's going to fall. And you wish it would fall a certain direction away from your house. But actually, that tree falls wherever it's going to fall, whether it be south or north. And guess what? When it hits, that's where it will be. And that's what he's saying. You can almost see this happening, and you're wishing you could stop it, but you can't. You can't control life. Now, those possibilities can paralyze us with fear. We don't always know our future, but we can kind of see how this will turn out bad. And so we are prone to think in terms of maybes or mights. Well, if I do this, this might happen, and that would be really bad. If I venture out this way, this might happen, and that would be a bad thing, and I couldn't control it. It might rain, the tree might fall, there might be an accident, there might be a broken relationship, I might get sick. And so we look at life and we understand the possibilities of life, but if we're always focused on those things we can't control, do you know what will happen? It will paralyze you. It will keep you from doing anything. This was understood by the Ministry of Information in World War II. It was Great Britain's Ministry of Information. They were headed into war with Germany. And they were certainly expecting the Blitz. That would have been bombing from the Germans. And so they actually had a kind of, not propaganda, but they wanted to help people in preparing for this inevitable bombing. And they made up some posters. These posters didn't actually go into circulation, but they were later found and discovered. But the posters said this: keep calm and, you know the saying? Keep calm and carry on. And what they wanted to communicate was this. Yeah, danger's coming. There's probably going to be bombing. You don't know when it's going to hit. There's uncertainty. You don't know how it's going to hit. You don't know what you'll be doing. But the worst thing you can do is panic and fear and do nothing. So keep calm and carry on. This really is the essence of Solomon's message to us. The tree's going to fall. It's going to rain. Don't let that immobilize you. Don't be controlled by your fear. How do we respond in fear to the uncertainties of life, to things that might happen? Well, oftentimes we're filled with anxiety. This is a technical kind of modern term for it. You know what the Bible calls anxiety? It's the spirit of fear. And the Bible tells us that God has not given us the spirit of fear. God doesn't want you to be fearful. But we often are. Why? Because we don't like surprises. I don't like not knowing what's going to happen. I don't like understanding there could be a problem, but not knowing for sure whether or not it will take place. And so some people try to gain a measure of control in those situations by clamping down with intensity. I'm going to control my situation so none of those things happen. I'm going to not leave the house today. I'm going to make sure my kids never go out of my sight. I'm going to make sure that I never put myself in a risky situation. I'm going to avoid all those possibilities, and I'm actually going to retreat from those things. Maybe they try to manipulate a situation with shouting or pouting or working or scheming. I'm just going to make more money and work my way out of this. This is the typical helicopter mom, right? Always thinking of what bad things might happen, so clamping down and taking control over every situation to ensure nothing will go wrong. That's not a wise way to respond to uncertainties. You're trying to be God and control your uncertainties. Solomon says, yeah, bad things happen. It rains and trees fall. You can't control it. Don't let it paralyze you. Don't be paralyzed by these events that could possibly happen and are out of your control. And then in verse 4, he says this, don't be paralyzed waiting for ideal conditions. This is the idea of perfect timing. Look what he says in verse 4. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. He's saying, don't wait for your ideal conditions. Don't be too analytical in the process, thinking I'm waiting for the perfect timing to act and I must strike it just right. Whereas one person responds to uncertainty in the future with intensity, I'm going to control it and clamp down. Here's the person that responds to the uncertainty with inactivity. I'm going to avoid it. I just won't do it because that will keep me safe. Keep me from looking foolish if I fail. This tends to be the response of perfectionistic people. People have to have everything just right in their life. And therefore, if I can't move forward and knowing exactly how it will turn out and everything will be exactly right, then I won't move forward at all. And we might come up with an excuse and say something like this. Well, you know, if you're going to do anything, you may as well do it right. And therefore, I'm not going to just jump into something and do it without doing it right. Well, be careful. That may be a tendency of a perfectionistic attitude that says, I'm just unwilling to take a risk and maybe even look foolish because it's not up to my standards. Solomon says, the one that observes the wind, you'll never find the ideal condition. It'll never be to your liking. He who regards the clouds won't reap. You'll always say, it might rain. I can't do it now. Our personal pride says I must have control that it's done right in my way and my time, or I won't do it at all. And the point Solomon is making is this. Although life is uncertain, don't just play it safe while waiting for your perfect timing. You need to trust God. How does this play out? I don't often give personal illustrations. I don't ever want to seem to be the hero of the story, but this struck me where this really came to me early on. I was in my late 20s. Amy and I were married. We had a 8-week-old son, and we believe that God had put on our heart to move 1,000 miles from where we were living and start a church in southern New Hampshire. Who thought that was a good idea? Well, I look back on that and I think it's probably good. I was kind of dense because I didn't really know all of the possibilities, right? Inexperienced, fairly new husband, new father, major transition, didn't know where we were going to live. But I thought there would have been great tendency for me to sit down and think, you know what, it's just not the right time. I need to get a little more settled. I need to get a little more education. I need to get a little more assurance of what's going to happen in the future. But oftentimes, God puts those things on your heart and he puts you in those situations to let you know you can't control everything. You're going to have to trust me for this. You're going to have to stretch beyond yourself and rely on me. So don't think Well, when I get older, then I'll serve God in the church. You know, when I get more established, then I'll really invest in the church and invest in Christ's kingdom. Don't think, well, when I get married, then I'll get serious about the Lord, because that'll be the right time. Don't think, when I get a good job, then I'll start giving to the Lord and His work. There's always going to be an excuse for why you shouldn't invest your talents or time or treasure and take risk. And oftentimes the timing doesn't look best, but God says, trust me. So what should we do? Life is uncertain. You don't know all these things. Well, we shouldn't play it safe and miss an opportunity, the first two verses have taught us. And we shouldn't play it safe and just wait for perfect timing when everything looks good to us. But it's the final two verses that Solomon really encaptures the thought and gives us exhortation. And here's the final thing he says in verses 5 and 6. Although life is uncertain, don't just play it safe, because God's sovereignty guides you. God is the one who guides you. He's the one in control. Look at how he mentions this. Look at verse 5. He's going to begin by telling us that God's sovereignty, His work, is often mysterious. Verse 5 says, as you do not know the way the Spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. Now, I need to address an issue in this verse, because again, some of you have other translations, good Bible translations in your lap, and there are many good English translations that we should avail ourselves of. But the question in verse 5 is this: is Solomon speaking of one analogy or two? In our English version, English Standard Version, and the Revised Standard, and the American Standard Version, it reads like there's just one analogy. You don't know the way that a spirit comes to the bones of a child in the womb. You don't know how we could say that consciousness happens, how there's a fetus that is formed, but that baby has the spirit within it. It is alive at conception. And we don't know how all of that works. It's mysterious. However, if you're holding a New International Version or a New American Standard Bible or a Christian Standard Bible or even the Old King James, there are two analogies. And they would read something like this: you don't know the way the wind comes, and you don't know how the bones of a child are formed in a mother's womb. And the reason they give two analogies, they're picking up on this term spirit in verse 5, because that same Hebrew term ruach is translated in verse 4 as wind. So they're saying, what Solomon's actually saying is, you don't know how the wind comes, you can't explain that, and you don't know how a baby's formed in the womb. I just wanted you to be aware of that in case you're looking at a different translation. My point is this: whether it's one analogy or two, they both make the same point. What is the point? You and I are limited in our knowledge. We're often ignorant of what God does. We can't explain it. I mean, you explained to me how a soul of a child enters the body. Nobody has. In fact, there's a great argument over that in theological circles. It's called, are you a creationist or are you a traducianist? You can look up those terms later for extra credit, okay? That's a whole argument in theology. And what's funny is they argue about that, and all the time Solomon's saying, give it up, you don't know. Just admit your ignorance. Ignorant of what? The last half of verse 5. You don't know the work of God who makes everything. God's the creator. He makes it. He makes it the wind blow, if that's your preference, and he makes the child form, or he makes the spirit. He brings the spirit into the womb, into the body of the child from conception. Either way, he says, you don't know God does that. He makes that. And so just admit your ignorance. God does whatever he wants. He's sovereign. Only God knows all things and makes everything. That is his prerogative. That is deity. We often want that prerogative, don't we? I need to know everything. I have to know to be comfortable. I have to know to feel loved and secure. And Solomon says, no, you don't. You're not God. It's okay. Well, you say, okay, so how do we respond to that? Then the response must be this. Since God controls everything, and I really have no say in that, I should just let it happen. And I'm going to do nothing. I'm going to sit here till Jesus comes. And God's going to do everything. He's going to save my neighbor. He's going to handle all my responsibilities. I mean, God's in control, right? And so I should just let go and let God, and I'm not going to do anything. And some people take that kind of hyper approach to the doctrine of God's sovereignty. What I find fascinating is this. What's Solomon's answer to that? Look at verse 6. Because God makes everything, in the morning, do what? Tell me, what's his answer? God controls everything. Get busy. God makes everything. Don't sit on your laurels. Work. Invest. Do good. Sow seed. And notice the intensity with which he says this. He says in verse 6, in the morning sow your seed, and our translation reads, and at evening withhold not your hand, for you don't know which will prosper, this or that. It kind of gives us the sense he's saying, okay, do a sowing in the morning, and then a sowing in the evening. You don't know which one of those seed groups are going to take place. That's not what he's saying. I think it's actually best translated, the at evening in verse 6 is best translated until evening. And what he's saying is, in the morning begin sowing your seed and do it all day long until the sun sets at the evening. Be diligent all day long because you don't know which of those things you've done all day long that God is actually going to prosper. So get busy all day long. Invest, serve, do what's right, trust God with the outcome. We could put it this way. You plant a garden, right? And when you plant a garden, all of those seeds you put into the ground, you bank on it that every one of those plants is going to do well, right? No. That's why you plant a lot of them. Because you know that even though you're going to water all and weed all and feed all and do your very best, there's some of those that just aren't going to make it. And who controls that? God does. But it doesn't mean you don't water and weed and feed all the plants. You're still active and you're trusting God with the outcome. One writer has said this, if we are never sure which endeavors will prove fruitful, the right approach to life is to give ourselves to the responsibilities at hand and wait the course of events. The life of faith, which leads to joy and contentment, does not give infallible knowledge of the future. He says, you can be content and joyful without knowing which plants are going to do well and which plants don't. Your joy is found in doing today what God gives you to do, sowing faithfully, doing what he's called you to do, and trusting him with the outcome. That's why this is the point of the passage. Although the future is uncertain, don't just play it safe, do something. Sow your seed. Be faithful with what God's given you to do. Look at the opportunities he's provided for you. Trust him with the outcome. Focus on your contribution, not the outcome. And that will help you live joyfully in this life. Can we apply this practically? Many parents in this room, and you're raising children and you're doing your best. How will your children turn out? Do you know? You don't. None of us do. If there were a formula for child rearing, A plus B equals C, and it always works out this way, every loving parent would follow that formula to a T. It doesn't always work out that way. So what should I do? Fear about the future? Control the outcome? Clamp down on my kids? Put them in a bubble? Never let them out of my care? Always make sure that they have exactly what I think they need? Not that that's a bad thing, but is that the right response? Or in activity, I don't know how they're going to turn out, so hey, it's on you, bud. I mean, okay, here's the keys, 7-year-old to the car. See how it works, all right? No, it's God's will is in those things, and I focus on today. What's my contribution today in the lives of these children? How do I point them to God today? How am I faithfully doing that every day, step by step? And then I'm praying and I'm trusting God with that ultimate outcome. I'm not immobilized by the fear, the uncertainty. I'm focused on my contribution, not simply the outcome. How about that job? How's your job going to turn out? Are you going to have a job next week, next year? Can you guarantee that? No. What are you to do today? You should be focused on being a faithful employee. I'm focused on what God has given me today and how to take the talents and abilities He's given me and invest for the good of others and even this company. And God will control the outcome of that. That's my responsibility. The point is, don't just play it safe. Listen to me very carefully. Don't just play it safe. Go ahead and die. Why do I say that? Jesus said, unless a corn of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it abides alone. But if it dies, it brings forth fruit. And what Jesus says is, when we're trying to control our life, when we're trying to mitigate casualties and uncertainties, or we're in avoidance mode and we're trying to play it safe, we're making ourselves king and trying to rule our little kingdom. And Jesus says, that's a sure way to lose your life. So why don't you let it go? Why don't you die? And let me rule your life. Why don't you trust me with the outcome? Why don't you get out there and not play it safe and do what I've called you to do and sow in the morning until evening? But trust me in the end. You'll find a life of fruit. Because God does make everything. And God does honor our service to Him. So don't just play it safe. Go ahead and die. Let's pray together.